What's going on, folks? Welcome to According to Sam. Thank you guys for tuning in. Man, you know, when I do this podcast, I prepare, you know, what I'm going to talk about. I have some idea about, you know, the direction that the podcast is going to go in. And I get all these clips, you know, and things queued up to talk about. And, you know, even though this is an hour podcast, you see, you know, the way that I do it, you know, it's, I get started and I run through the whole hour, no breaks or anything. And just, it's just like, just giving you information, you know, talking about whatever the theme is that I'm exploring in a given podcast. And at the end of the podcast, when the hour is up, I typically have things that are left over, clips that are left over, things that I wanted to say in the podcast that I didn't get to. And the last podcast that I did talking about Christian nationalism is, you know, a podcast that I have a lot more that I did not share with you guys in that podcast that I wanted to share with you. So I'm going to have to pick that back up, not in this podcast, because what I want to do, I think Ukraine and what I've been talking about with the series of podcasts that I've been doing on Ukraine, I've been hearing from people that they have been very informative and helped them to understand the situation in Ukraine from perspectives that they did not have before. And I think that this is very, very important. So I'm going to finish up talking about Ukraine, but I'm going to get back into, it may not be on Friday. It may be the week after that, depending on what's going on, but I want to get back into what I was talking about in the last podcast about Christian nationalism, this political term that's being thrown around. I want to, you know, explore the cultural revolution that I was talking about that happened in the 1950s and 1960s and show you that that was not an accident. That cultural revolution that happened in the late 50s and in the 60s to start changing this culture, it was planned, that people planned that. So I want to get further into that and talk about that issue more down the line. I also want to get back into the Mesopotamian history that I started sharing with you guys a few podcasts ago, talking about the Sumerians. I told you I wanted to get into talking about the Akkadians and then the Babylonians and explain things about that history that that I think relate to things that are going on today. And even in the last podcast that I was talking about with the Christian nationalism and how religion and politics, how it is has always been infused, even going back to the Mesopotamian cultures like the Sumerians, the Akkadians, the Babylonians. So I want to show how the religion and politics was infused in their societies and relate it to what's going on in our society. So I want to get back into all of that stuff. And I will. I just want you guys to know that there's still a lot that I left on the table in the last podcast, and I plan on picking that back up. But today we are going to be talking about Ukraine again. And we lost Victoria Nuland last week. Victoria Nuland, the mama, and her three little babies here are the ones who staged the coup in Ukraine in 2014 with the help of John Brennan and the CIA. And these are the players. And we lost Victoria Nuland last week. She was a character that we talked about quite a bit on this podcast over the past few weeks, talking about Ukraine. We listened to the phone call that was tapped and leaked between her and the then ambassador to Ukraine, Jeffrey Pyatt. She was very much involved in what went on in Ukraine. And this woman is a witch. And she is no longer at the State Department. She resigned last week. Now, why did she resign? There's been a lot of speculation and people offering theories about why she resigned. Again, she was just on CNN and did this major interview with Christine Amanpour just, 2 weeks ago, where she is talking about Ukraine and how much she was involved and she was requesting that the House of Representatives pass this $95 billion supplemental package that has been in limbo since the Senate has passed it. And she was advocating for that. And then just out of the sudden, all of a sudden, out of the blue, she resigns. And there's been a lot of theories, a lot of people offering theories why she resigned. My question is, why was she in the Joe Biden State Department in the first place? Why was this neocon? That's my question. Why she resigned? I'll tell you my theory on why she resigned here in a moment. But I think the more important question is why this ultra conservative neocon was working in the Joe Biden, who's supposed to be a Democrat, liberal. Why is this ultra conservative neocon working in the Joe Biden State Department? Why was she working in the Barack Hussein Obama State Department, who is also a Democrat and supposed to be a liberal. And this is a ultra conservative neocon. Let me tell you who she is. Let's go back down here and talk about, because I told you who her husband was, Robert Kagan, but I don't think, let's get into who Robert Kagan is. This is Victoria Nuland's husband. Robert Kagan, co-founder of the Neoconservative Project for the New American Century. So what is the project for the New American Century? So they organized in 1997. So this is the 20th century winding down. They organized 3 years before the millennium, the new millennium, the new century, and that's what they call their organization, the Project for the New American Century. It says here, the Project for the New American Century was a neoconservative think tank based in Washington, D.C., that focused on United States foreign policy. Now, if you know anything about the Project for the New American Century, it was a group that they were focused on establishing the United States hegemony throughout the world, United States dominance throughout the world using military tactics. So it was established as a nonprofit educational organization in 1997 and founded by Bill Kristol. Okay, Bill Kristol is a Biden supporter now. If he's all over, you go to his Twitter X account, he's... all of these neoconservatives are. Not only is Victoria Nuland, who is the husband of the founder of this group, so Robert Kagan, who is Victoria Nuland's husband, and Bill Kristol, they founded this neoconservative group called the Project for the New American Century. Now, Victoria Nuland is working in the Biden as neoconservative Republican. These guys were big Bush fans. They were advocating for Bush and the war in Iraq. That was part of the Project for the New American Century. They theorized in their papers that there would have to be some Pearl Harbor type of event There would have to be some Pearl Harbor type of event is what these guys theorize to kick off this project for a new American century. And now again, Bill Kristol is, he hates Trump. He's an advocate, for Joe Biden. Robert Kagan's, wife was in the Biden, and Obama State Department's running foreign policy, a very aggressive, hawkish foreign policy, very hawkish foreign policy for someone who's supposed to be a Democrat, a liberal like Barack Obama and Joe Biden. Come down here. In this paragraph, of the 25 people who signed the Project for the New American Century Founding Statement of Principles, 10 went on to serve in the administration of U.S. President George W. Bush, including Dick Cheney, Don Rumsfeld, Paul Wolfowitz. These are all of the architects of the Iraq War that they said a Pearl Harbor type of event was needed. So that's who Victoria Nuland is, okay? That's who she is. So how does this neocon get into the Biden administration seamlessly? That's what I want you guys to understand, that this stuff about parties and Democrats and Republicans and conservatives and liberals, that means nothing to these people. It's just they have a party of one. They don't care about those things. Those terms are for you. So you can go out and fight with your neighbor who is a liberal and you're a conservative, or they're a Democrat and you are a Republican. These people do not care. These people do not care. She worked for the Clinton administration. Look at this. Victoria Nuland worked for the Clinton administration. Then she came in and worked for the Bush administration from 2000. So right there, as we're building up to the Iraq War, selling the Iraq War, lying us into the Iraq War, from 2003 to 2005, Victoria Nuland served as the principal deputy national security advisor to Dick Cheney, Liz Cheney's father. This guy was central. He's part of the Project for the New American Century. He's one of the signers of their founding document. And this guy was there for 9/11, for the selling of the war in Iraq. And Victoria Nuland was working for him. So she, this is a very neoconservative, hawkish witch is who she is, that we lost last week. We'll listen to a little bit of Glenn Greenwald talk a little bit about Victoria Nuland, and then I'm going to tell you my theory on why she resigned.
Because although you mentioned most of the lowlights of her career, one of the things you omitted that actually was most important in launching her as a major voice in Washington was that she was Dick Cheney's top advisor in the White House in 2003 and for the next several years for counseling him on how to implement the invasion of Iraq and then how to maintain the occupation of Iraq. And we're supposed to regard, I thought, the Iraq War as some kind of grave at best mistake, if not moral crime, the worst war of the last generation. And yet the people responsible, which certainly includes Victoria Nuland, it's almost like we don't even remember anymore who these people are. We don't even mention it. We just elected Adam Smith, the Democrats did rather, to the Senate effectively in California last night. He was a major voice for the Iraq War. Of course, Joe Biden was. It's like this has all been forgotten. And then from there, she just continued to implement classical neoconservative policies, not just wanting to confront Russia, but most other countries in the world. And she's part of this neocon circle that liberals just 15 years ago used to describe as warmongering and psychotic. And yet she served very comfortably under the Obama administration with both John Kerry and Hillary Clinton, and then ran Ukraine for both Obama and now Biden.
She was running it. She was running it. So not only that, when Barack Obama comes in 2008 or 2009, he had run on a very dovish foreign policy when he ran in 2009. As a matter of fact, that's how he won the nomination from Hillary Clinton because he accused Hillary Clinton of being a hawkish Democrat, that she voted for the Iraq war, that she sold the Iraq war, which she did both. She sold the Iraq war. She voted for the Iraq war. Everything that Obama said about Hillary Clinton was right when he was running in 2008. But then he comes in and then he keeps this guy on as his Secretary of Defense. Now, Robert Gates was George H.W. Bush's Director of Central Intelligence. He was Deputy Director of CIA under Ronald Reagan. He ran Iran-Contra. He was running the guns down to Nicaragua. He ran the weapons to Iran. He was the second in command under Casey. And then he was he became the DCI under George H.W. Bush, and then George W. Bush, after Rumsfeld resigns in 2006, then he brings Bob Gates on to a hawk. This guy is a neoconservative hawk, this guy. So Obama not only has hawks in his State Department, he picks Hillary Clinton to be a Secretary of State, who, and then she's got Victoria Nuland running foreign policy under her, hawk. And then Bob Gates is running the Pentagon under Barack Obama after he runs on this dovish foreign policy in 2008. First thing he does is sends something like 200,000 more troops to Afghanistan and ramps up the war in Afghanistan. He arms ISIS. He goes into Libya, expanded, you know. I mean, people, what is going on? What's going on here? What's going on? What's really going on? So, talked a little bit in the last podcast about Joe Biden's State of the Union address last week. And I was explaining how this is the state of our union, the state of the United States of America. And this guy opens up his address talking about Ukraine and how important it is for us to send billions of dollars to Ukraine. I was astonished by this. Like, at least, you know, you know, at least yank our chain a little bit. At least, you know, throw us a bone or something before you get into the Ukraine stuff. But no, right off the bat, he gets into the Ukraine stuff. Like, that is the most important issue to Americans. And this is a guy, again, let me just play this clip. This is the clip of him and the beginning of his State of the Union last week. And I want to point out what these guys are doing, and then we're going to get back into talking about Ukraine. But take a listen to Biden here.
Not since President Lincoln and the Civil War have freedom and democracy been under assault at home as they are today. What makes our moment rare is that freedom and democracy are under attack at both at home and overseas at the very same time. Overseas, Putin of Russia is on the march, invading Ukraine and sowing chaos throughout Europe and beyond. If anybody in this room thinks Putin will stop at Ukraine, I assure you he will not.
So that is a very common line, that we have to stop Putin in Ukraine, because if we don't stop Putin in Ukraine, then he's going to go into Poland. He's going to go into Lithuania. He's going to go into other countries in Europe. And so we have to stop him in Ukraine, because if we don't stop him in Ukraine after he invades Ukraine, then he's going to go into Poland. So we're hearing this over and over again. That's what they're saying in the media. Joe Biden has been saying this over and over again, not only Joe Biden. Here is Nikki Haley, hawk as well, a defense hawk here is who this woman is. That's why she was rejected by the electorate, because the Republican Party has changed so much since the neoconservative days of the likes of Victoria Nuland, her husband, and their friends. The Republican Party has changed quite a bit since then. So now all of the war hawks are in the Democratic Party, and they're all supporting Joe Biden now, all of them. So the defense establishment, they were throwing a lot of money at this woman to try to get her to disrupt Trump, and to they wanted her to win the nomination because her foreign policy is exactly like his foreign policy. They have the exact same foreign policy. There's no foreign policy. There's no difference in what Joe Biden said in his State of the Union last week and what Nikki Haley says here.
Saturday, February 24th, the same day as your primary, is 2 years exactly to the date that the war started when Russia invaded Ukraine. I'm wondering, you know, with 48% of Americans in a recent poll saying that they thought we didn't need to spend more, that we spent too much already. They want to do no.
48% of Americans are now saying that they do not want to spend more money on the war in Ukraine. That's significant. That's why, that's why I'm really worried about what these people are going to do, because those numbers are getting worse. More people are starting to see the light. And then, so going back to Victoria Nuland, I was going to explain why I think that she resigned last week. And my theory is Joe Biden asked for her resignation. And I believe that Joe Biden asked for her resignation because this guy is in real trouble within his own party with what is going on in Israel. In Israel and Gaza. And they're calling this guy Genocide Joe. And people are going back and they're looking at his foreign policy record. You can't have Genocide Jane in your State Department when people are calling you Genocide Joe. I think that Joe Biden realized that people are starting to become aware what this woman did in Ukraine, and the fact that she is a major figure in what happened in Ukraine. And they know that, and people know that. And a lot of his own party within the Democratic Party are starting to wake up and understand the truth about what happened in Ukraine. And Joe Biden asked for this woman's resignation because you can't have Genocide Jane in your State Department when people are running around and protesting you and calling you Genocide Joe. So that's what I believe happened. So back to Nikki Haley.
We spent too much already. They want to know exactly where the dollars are going to Ukraine. With that kind of headwind, you have advocated for continued aid for Ukraine. Can you make that case, and can you convince people to see it your way?
Well, first of all, I think we should never govern by the polls. I think
And that's exactly why you didn't win the nomination.
I think we should never govern by the polls. I think we need to tell people the hard truths. I blame Joe Biden because he has never once told the American people why they should care about Ukraine.
That's a lie.
And I think we have to look at the fact that I don't think we should give cash to any country, friend or enemy, because you can't follow it and you can't hold it accountable. But in this situation, the reason it matters so much, Harris, is because Putin has said once he takes Ukraine, Poland and the Baltics are next.
So she says Putin says this, that Putin says that once he takes Ukraine, that Poland and the Baltics are next. Same thing that Joe Biden's saying here, that we have to do this because if we let Putin take Ukraine, he's going to move into Poland. And this bird brain even goes even further and says that Putin says that Putin says that is his objective, that once I take Ukraine, I'm going into Poland. Putin says nothing of the sort. Here's Putin in the interview with Tucker Carlson just a few weeks ago, and they get into this scare tactic, this threat that if Putin goes, you know, if we allow Putin to be successful in Ukraine, then he's going to go into Poland and go into the rest of Europe. And It's absolutely ridiculous to even think about something like that, that Russia's on the march and they're going to go in with what? With what resources? See, that's the thing. They're telling us that Russia is so weak that if we just give Ukraine more weapons, that Ukraine, which is a smaller nation than Russia, that they're going to defeat Russia because Russia is so weak and they are losing all of these men and they're losing and they're weak. And if we just give Ukraine the weapons, then they can win this war. But that same weak Russia is prepared to take over Poland and take over the rest of Europe. Which is it? Is Poland strong enough to take over Europe if we don't stop him in Ukraine? And then how's Ukraine going to beat them? And then if they are weak enough to where Ukraine can defeat them, then how are they going to take over Poland and the rest of Europe? You can't have it both ways. And this is what Putin says here. Anyone who's a thinking person would reject this outright.
Nuclear conflict?
At least that's what they're talking about. And they're trying to intimidate their own population with an imaginary Russian threat. This is an obvious fact. And thinking people, not Philistines, but thinking people, analysts, those who are engaged in real politics, just smart people, understand perfectly well that this is a fake. They're trying to fuel the Russian threat.
The threat I think you're referring to is a Russian invasion of Poland, Latvia, expansionist behavior. Can you imagine a scenario where you sent Russian troops to Poland?
Only in one case, if Poland attacks Russia. Why? Because we have no interest in Poland, Latvia, or anywhere else.
Well, that's weird.
Why would we do that?
That's weird because why would Nimrata lie like that? Well, because Nimrata right here says that Putin says that is his objective, that Putin has said, this is what she says right here, as Putin has said, that once he takes Ukraine, he wants to go into Poland and take the rest of Europe. It's really weird.
Very friend or enemy, because you can't follow it and you can't hold it accountable. But in this situation, the reason it matters so much, Harris, is because Putin has said once he takes Ukraine, Poland and the Baltics are next.
He said nothing of the sort. Putin has said nothing of the sort. She is 100% lying.
Takes Ukraine. Poland and the Baltics are next. Those are NATO countries that immediately puts America at war. This is about preventing war. We should give them the equipment and ammunition they need to win. It is only 3.5% of our defense budget, and it saves us in the long run from having to send more resources or any of our men and women to do that. We don't want war. We've got to prevent it. And I'll tell you,
we don't want war. We need to send more weapons for more war. These people are so disgusting. These people are so disgusting. This woman has the exact
same... It was really dangerous.
She has the exact same foreign policy as Joe Biden. As a matter of fact, all three of these people have the exact same foreign policy, and I'm just waiting for this guy to do what I know he's going to do. I know what this guy's going to do, and I'm just waiting for it to happen. But they all have the same foreign policy, and they're lying. Putin's not interested in anything else but Ukraine, and I'm going to show you, and I've been showing you, why Ukraine is a unique interest to Russia, and Vladimir Putin has nothing to do with some conquest, like he's ready to take on all of Europe. It's absolutely ridiculous.
Only in one case, if Poland attacks Russia. Why? Because we have no interest in Poland, Latvia, or anywhere else. Why would we do that? We simply don't have any interest. It's just threat-mongering.
Well, the argument, I know you know this, is that, well, he invaded Ukraine. He has territorial aims across the continent, and you're saying unequivocally you don't.
Абсолютно, это абсолютно исключено.
It is absolutely out of the question.
Absolutely out of the question.
You just don't have to be any kind of analyst. It goes against common sense to get involved in some kind of a global war.
Common sense. A lot of people don't have common sense, Vladimir.
And a global war will bring all humanity to the brink of destruction. It's obvious. There are certainly means of deterrence. They have been scaring everyone with us all along. Tomorrow Russia will use tactical nuclear weapons. Tomorrow Russia will use that. No, the day after tomorrow. So what? In order to extort additional money from U.S. taxpayers and European taxpayers in the confrontation with Russia.
They're using the threat of Russia to extort money from U.S. taxpayers. They're using the threat of Russia to extort money. That's what Putin says. I mean, this guy was in the KGB. I don't know if we can believe him. I don't know if we can believe this KGB guy, you know. He's a trained liar, trained mind manipulator. But he said that they're using the threat of Russia, that he's not interested in invading any other countries, and they're using the threat of Russia to extort money from U.S. taxpayers. That's probably not true. There's probably no truth to that at all. What they're doing here, again, they're trying to resurrect Cold War Red Scare propaganda tactics. And they're trying to get people to conflate Russia with the Soviet Union. And they are trying to get people to not remember that Barack Hussein Obama, Hillary Clinton, that they reset our relationship with Russia in 2009. And that Russia is not the Soviet Union, but they're bringing back all of the Red Scare Soviet Union tactics. And this thing that they're doing where they're using the scare of Russia to extort money from the American taxpayers, this thing that they're doing from the Cold War is called the Domino Theory. And the Domino Theory, I have a little clip here about what the domino theory is. I want you to take a listen to it.
Domino theory has very little to do with dominoes, and even less to do with pizza. Instead, it deals with the spread of communism throughout the world. It was said that if one nation adopted communism, so too would nearby nations, one after the other, after the other. While he never trademarked the term domino theory, President Dwight D. Eisenhower was the first person to use the analogy during a 1954 news conference. In a time when communism was seen in much of the West as an immense evil, the idea of country after country falling to the communists was terrifying to many Americans. Most fears centered around Southeast Asian countries like Vietnam, and domino theory provided a convenient reason for the United States to get involved in police actions in the region.
What did you just say? Domino theory allowed the United States a reason to get into police actions? Interesting.
To get involved in police actions in the region.
Interesting.
Most fears centered around Southeast Asian countries like Vietnam. And domino theory provided a convenient reason for the United States to get involved in police actions in the region.
Oh, a convenient reason for the United States to get into military actions. Domino theory.
Country after country falling to the communists was terrifying to many Americans. Most fears centered around Southeast Asian countries like Vietnam. And domino theory provided a convenient reason for the United States to get involved in police actions in the region to prevent the spread of communism. Although maybe it'd be better if we solved our problems over a real game of dominoes instead.
All right, so that's domino theory, and that's the Red Scare that they are using, Red Scare tactic that they are using to, like Putin said, extort money from the American taxpayer. But if anyone should be accused of being a country that is moving in from country to country, invading country to country, the domino theory, what I'm trying to say is that the domino theory would apply to the United States more than it would apply to Russia today. in the 21st century, back to the project for the new American century. Project. So from the beginning of the 21st century, the project for the new American century, the domino theory would be more apt to say that the United States is guilty of this than Russia. The United States went after 9/11, went into Iraq, went into Afghanistan, went into Syria, went to Libya. Where else have we gone? Yemen, Sudan, Somalia. You remember the Wesley Clark 7 too. That's the domino theory. That when Wesley Clark is saying we're hitting all these countries, we're the ones who are knocking over the dominoes. Russia could accuse us of knocking over dominoes, and we're pointing the finger at them. You know, the war in Iraq is the biggest foreign policy shame of American history, and there are many, many foreign policy shames in American history. Many. But the biggest is the Iraq war, without a doubt. And it was all set up by these people. Project for the New American Century. Paul Wolfowitz, Donald Rumsfeld, Dick Cheney, George W. Bush, and also Joe Biden. Joe Biden was a major player in the war in Iraq. As a matter of fact, it's safe to say that the war in Iraq probably could not have happened without Joe Biden, because without Joe Biden, they couldn't have gotten congressional approval. And it would have been very difficult for George Bush to go into Iraq without congressional approval and not get impeached. This is a pretty long clip. I want to play this clip, and I'm going to stop it, you know, as it's going, because I want to talk about this. This is a clip from a documentary about the major role that Joe Biden, Genocide Joe here, played in the war in Iraq, and us knocking down that domino, and that domino being actually, that was the second. Afghanistan was the first, you know, and then Iraq, and then we moved from domino to domino after that. But Iraq is the biggest shame, without a doubt, the way that that war was sold, the way that it was lied, not only to the American people, but when they took the story to the UN, and they tried to get UN support, that the way that they lied to the United Nations and the rest of the world. And then when the UN was about to veto a new resolution, the Bush administration withdraws the resolution and says that I'm building a coalition of the willing and just, you know, going around the world, knocking down dominoes. And he wouldn't have been able to do that. Let me show you why he wouldn't have been able to do that without Joe Biden.
The costs of the Iraq war were enormous. More than 4,500 American soldiers, as well as thousands of military contractors, were killed. Tens of thousands of U.S. soldiers were wounded. Hundreds of thousands of Iraqis, and by some estimates, more than 1 million were killed.
Lies.
And the
Those
war created
lies.
Massive instability, including more wars and terrorism throughout the Middle East and North Africa. Fast forward to the 2020 presidential race. There's only one candidate for the nomination of the Democratic Party who played a leading role in actually making the Iraq War happen.
In my judgment, President Bush is right to be concerned about Saddam Hussein's relentless pursuit of weapons of mass destruction and the possibility that he may use them or share them with terrorists. Other regimes hostile to the United States and our allies already have or seek to acquire weapons of mass destruction.
This was Joe Biden in 2002, speaking as chair of the United States Senate Committee on Foreign Relations. A few months later, when the Senate was debating whether to give President George W. Bush the authority to start a war with Iraq, Biden argued strongly in favor of granting this authority.
The objective is to compel Iraq to destroy its illegal weapons of mass destruction and its programs to develop and produce missiles and more of those weapons. Saddam is dangerous. The world would be a better place without him. But the reason he poses a growing danger to the United States and its allies is that he possesses chemical and biological weapons and is seeking nuclear weapons. And unlike my colleague from West Virginia and Maryland, I do not believe this is a rush to war. I believe it's a march to peace and security. I believe that failure to overwhelmingly support this resolution is likely to enhance the prospects that war will occur.
Joe Biden did so much more than vote for the war. He was the chair of the powerful Senate Committee on Foreign Relations, and he really used his control over that committee to make sure that a majority of the U.S. Senate voted to authorize the war. And that's a very serious thing.
Historian Barbara Ransby.
It's questionable whether the authorization to start the war could have even passed Congress without all that Biden did to get it approved. So
he was the chair of the Foreign Relations Committee. So he played a major role in getting it approved.
Biden did to get it approved. So he really did play a major role in bringing us into the Iraq War, a terrible, terrible war. And this was much more responsibility. He bears much more responsibility than many other senators who simply voted for it. Of course, the statement about chemical, biological, and nuclear weapons were false. And many experts already concluded this at the time of the Senate hearings, but Biden didn't allow these experts to testify. That's really significant. As chair of the Foreign Relations Committee, Biden was able to control the Senate debate.
So he wouldn't let people who had different narratives, the true narratives, the fact that that there were no weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, and Iraq didn't have a nuclear program, and experts, they tried to bring experts into the committee hearing before they approved this war, and Joe Biden wouldn't let those experts testify. And he was the chair, and look at what this guy did.
The Foreign Relations Committee, Biden was able to control the Senate debate on the war, and therefore much of the information that most senators received and that major media outlets reported was really distorted.
There were other Democrats in the Senate who wanted to put limits on Bush's ability to start a war in Iraq.
Very, very important.
For example, if there was no imminent threat to the United States and the United Nations did not authorize a war, then President Bush would have to come back to Congress for another resolution. But Biden shot this down.
Now, Biden shot that down. Now, listen to what they were saying. So Congress approved this war first. You know, you got to think that this is right after 9/11. The country is on edge, and Biden is making, Trump or Bush is making the case that we have to invade Iraq, that Iraq has chemical and biological weapons and an ongoing nuclear program. You remember that they started mailing anthrax around to people with a letter inside the envelope with the anthrax, 9/11, Allah is great, death to Israel. So whoever wrote this letter is impersonating a Muslim extremist. So, you know, they're going around and they're telling people that this anthrax came from Iraq and that Iraq has more chemical and biological weapons. We have to immediately go and invade Iraq to stop them because they may give these chemical, biological weapons, nuclear weapons to a terrorist that will be the next big attack. It was all set up by the Project for the New American Century. Anyway, Joe Biden. So one of the members, looks like Carl Levin here, tries to introduce a amendment into the authorization that says if you go to the UN and you don't get authorization from the UN, then you have to come back to Congress and get authorization from us again. This is very important because Bush does not get authorization from the UN. As I was just telling you, the UN was not buying this. The UN was going to veto France, Russia, I think China as well. Those are the permanent members that were going to veto the resolution. And I'm not sure he had the votes to pass the resolution even without the vetoes. So the UN did not approve this. And this would have been a very significant amendment if the UN wouldn't have approved it. He would have had to come back to Congress. Joe Biden, Genocide Joe, is the one who shot it down.
He concluded this at the time of the Senate hearings, but Biden didn't allow these experts to testify. That's really significant. As chair of the Foreign Relations Committee, Biden was able to control the Senate debate on the war, and therefore much of the information that most senators received and that major media outlets reported was really distorted.
There were other Democrats in the Senate who wanted to put limits on Bush's ability to start a war in Iraq. For example, if there was no imminent threat to the United States and the United Nations did not authorize a war, then President Bush would have to come back to Congress for another resolution. But Biden shot this down.
So the reason why I oppose the amendment of my friend from Michigan is because the basic premise upon which I began is consistent with where my friend from Connecticut begins, and that is that the threat need not be imminent for us to take action.
Wow.
That's authority we're about to delegate to the president.
So the threat does not need to be imminent for us to take action. We're getting ready to give this power to Republican hawk George Bush. This guy's a Democrat liberal. He says, I'm going to delegate this power. We don't even need a threat. We're going to delegate this power to George Bush, this liberal here, this liberal who had Victoria Nuland in his State Department.
Already we're about to delegate to the president.
So the fact that he would take such a stridently pro-war position, that he would use that role to limit the debate the way he did, played a major factor in getting the enough defections from the Democratic majority to join with almost unanimous Republican support to make the war resolution pass.
Professor Stephen Zunes.
As a result, it's just the opposite. So listen to what he says. So you had the entire Republican caucus vote for the war. And now you have the entire Democrat caucus voting for Ukraine war, except two or three. When the authorization for Iraq, only one Republican voted against it. He ended up changing his party later and becoming a Democrat. But it was pretty much unanimous Republican support. So if you get unanimous Republican support, you really only have to peel off, 15 to 20 Democrats. And with the help of Joe Biden, they were able to peel off the 15 to 20 Democrats that they needed because of Joe Biden to get the resolution passed. And now it's the opposite is what I'm saying, is that now you have the entire Democrat caucus voting for the war. And then Mitch McConnell can get 15 to 20 Republicans, and that's how they get it passed. That's how they passed the Ukraine supplemental out of the Senate. It had less than half of the Republican caucus and pretty much the entire Democratic caucus.
Connecticut begins, and that is that the threat need not be imminent for us to take action. That's authority we're about to delegate to the president.
So the fact that he would take such a stridently pro-war position, that he would use that role to limit the debate the way he did, played a major factor in getting the enough defections from the Democratic majority to join with almost unanimous Republican support to make the war resolution pass.
Professor Stephen Zunes.
As a result, I don't think it would be unfair to say that Biden played a more important role than probably anybody in Congress in making the Iraq war possible. The idea that Iraq, which had been rid of its non-conventional weapons and weapons programs and weapon systems, that was under the strictest sanctions of any nation has ever experienced, was somehow a threat to the United States and the far side of the world is totally absurd. I mean, totally ridiculous. I mean, the fact that an educated person like Joe Biden with foreign policy experience would believe that, it really defies the imagination.
But the witnesses mostly reinforced the pro-war arguments.
The question before us really is, should the United States depose Saddam Hussein? And my answer is clearly yes.
My suggestion, as I stated earlier, is that regime change, as the stated U.S. policy, would be the correct way to deal with it.
These are all the witnesses that Joe Biden, as chair of the Foreign Relations Committee, he would only allow witnesses in who would support the fact that Iraq had chemical and biological weapons and a nuclear program. And when other senators would try to bring in other witnesses, he wouldn't allow it.
This problem.
In my opinion, weapons inspections are not the answer to the real problem, which is the regime.
And the people want a regime change. Let's help them to make this change and liberate Iraq from this oppressor.
Iraq has enough to generate the needed bomb-grade uranium for 3 nuclear weapons by 2005. It is too difficult to see how any measure short of a regime change will be effective.
A nuclear-armed Saddam sometime in this decade is a risk we cannot choose to ignore.
It is essential to recognize that the claim made by Saddam's representatives that Iraq has no weapons of mass destruction is false.
We know that Iraq permits known al-Qaeda members to live and move freely about in Iraq. I am told that that is the case, that the al-Qaeda groups are welcome and that they're being supported. Their families are being supported.
That's a lie. There was never any al-Qaeda in Iraq. And again, if you were a thinking person, if you understood this stuff, you would know that Saddam Hussein was pretty much a secular Muslim. He wasn't a religious Muslim. Al-Qaeda is a very religious fundamentalist group. They have nothing. The Saddam Hussein Ba'athist Party and Al-Qaeda had nothing in common. But they let people come, and Joe Biden let people come to the Senate Foreign Relations Committee and tell these lies.
That is the case, that the al-Qaeda groups are welcome and that they're being supported. Their families are being supported.
I have to tell you, Iraqis desperately want to be freed of Saddam Hussein, and they also know that the only country that can help them with this is the United States. And they are ready to welcome the U.S. as liberators.
Has worked.
Senator Lincoln Chafee of Rhode Island pushed back.
Lincoln Chafee is the guy that I was just telling you about. He's a Republican from Long Island. He was the only one to vote against the Iraq resolution, and then he later became a Democrat. But besides Chafee, it was the entire caucus.
Has worked.
Senator Lincoln Chafee of Rhode Island pushed back against the witnesses being stacked, but Biden cut him off.
Okay. And I do think that it would have been good to have that perspective on this panel for a better balance. I think we've got from this panel a perspective that the threat is very real, very immediate. And I maybe would ask you to comment on some of these senior military officials, including, according to the article, members of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and their
General Yield, just for a moment. I apologize, but
excuse me. Now he's complaining that the witnesses are stacked and that Joe Biden won't let any witnesses in that have different points of view than the fact that the threat is real, and Biden cuts him off.
Article members of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and their
General Yield, just for a moment. I apologize, but
excuse me.
The senator from Florida is going to chair the hearing. I have to leave for a few minutes. And after this panel is over, we'll recess for how much time for lunch? 45 minutes for lunch when this panel, I'm not suggesting we finish now, but when the panel is finished, we're recessed for 45 minutes. And I assure you, Senator, there are other witnesses coming along who think the policy of containment is just fine. So I hope you'll find this is extremely balanced when we finish the whole 2 days of hearings. But I thank you for your letting me interrupt and I turning the gavel over.
Biden never returned to the problem.
So Biden never returned, never let Chafee or any of the other senators bring in witnesses that had a different point of view. Now I want you to look at what Joe Biden is saying today. This is an interview that he just gave on yesterday or Saturday. Listen to Joe Biden.
I sat with them and I sat with a war cabinet. I said, look, don't make the mistake America made. America made a mistake. We went after bin Laden until we got him. But we shouldn't have gone into Ukraine. I mean, we shouldn't have gone into the whole thing in Iraq and Afghanistan. It wasn't necessary.
We shouldn't have gone into Iraq. It wasn't necessary. We shouldn't have gone into Iraq. It wasn't necessary. He first says Ukraine. Oh, my God. You guys are voting for this guy, huh? All right.
I sat with him and I said, look, don't make the mistake America made. America made a mistake. We went after bin Laden until we got him. But we shouldn't have gone into Ukraine. I mean, we shouldn't have gone into the whole thing in Iraq and Afghanistan. It wasn't necessary. It wasn't necessary. And it just caused more problems than the race.
So it wasn't necessary, and it just caused more problems than it raised. What's he talking about? He sold the whole thing. He sold the whole thing. He said we need
the prospects the war will occur.
Joe Biden did so much more than vote for the war. He was the chair of the powerful Senate Committee on Foreign Relations, and he really used his control over that committee to make sure that a majority of the U.S. Senate voted to authorize the war. And that
interesting, because now he's saying we shouldn't have gone. It wasn't worth it. It caused more problems.
Wow. America made a mistake. We went after bin Laden until we got him. But we shouldn't have gone into Ukraine. I mean, we shouldn't have gone into the whole thing in Iraq and Afghanistan. It wasn't necessary. It wasn't necessary. And it just caused more problems than the race.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you 100%, Biden. It was not necessary, and it caused more problems. A lot more problems. Going back to what I was talking about last podcast about this Christian nationalism mess and people like Russell Moore and these other people who, particularly Russell Moore, who were Bush sycophants. And now they're coming out and saying that you can't be a good Christian and vote for Donald Trump, that Donald Trump is so bad that these guys never said anything negative about George W. Bush, who was warned before 9/11 that terrorists were in the country and that they were about to hijack planes. He was warned specifically about the method of attack a month before 9/11. They let 9/11 happen because the Project for the New American Century said we need a Pearl Harbor type of event. And then they use it to, again, use American anthrax to mail around America to make people think that there was a Muslim attack of anthrax to heighten people's sensitivities to chemical and biological weapons. And they use the lie of chemical and biological weapons, even nuclear weapons, and the threat of a mushroom cloud in the United States to take us into Iraq. And then from Iraq, all over the Middle East into Africa in the Obama administration. But to start this off, the land letter. I don't know if you guys have ever heard of the land letter, but why don't people like Russell Moore, who want to criticize Christians for voting for Trump and supporting Trump right now, why don't they ever talk about the land letter? You guys know what the land letter is? It says here, let me expand it for you so you guys want to read. It says the land letter was a letter sent to U.S. President George W. Bush by five evangelical Christian leaders on October 3rd, 2022, outlining their support for a just preemptive invasion of Iraq. There was nothing just about the invasion of Iraq. But these evangelical ministers, and I have told you when I was telling you about how these witches have penetrated every area of our society, even our churches, you have to understand that not everybody who calls themselves a minister is a minister of the gospel. Some of them are ministers of hell. And to put your name on this as a Christian minister, to be someone who's supporting, who's supposed to be representing the Prince of Peace, to write a letter and put your name on this and saying that this has the, this war, this illegal invasion of Iraq that you've lied us into has the support of God, and put the Christian stamp of approval on it is what these guys did. And this letter is called the Land Letter because Richard D. Land is, he's one of the ministers who signed it, and he set the whole thing up. So I just wanted to bring that to your attention because a lot of people don't know about the Land Letter. So these neocons are not only in government, but they're also in the churches as well. That's what I want you to understand. Anyway, that's the podcast, folks. I will be back on Friday, and we'll talk about Ukraine. I meant to get into some more stuff about Ukraine in this podcast, but I didn't get into it. But we're going to get into it on Friday, and then hopefully I can finish up talking about Ukraine and covering all that stuff on, if not Friday, Monday, and then have a lot more that we're going to get into next week. Thank you guys for watching, and I'll see you guys on Friday.